This is a Web Canopy Studio production.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Dropping the Gloves with John Scott and Tim Wurzberger. I hope you're all excited. I know I am. This week, I get to talk to my buddy, Ryan Miller, goalie for the Anaheim Mighty Ducks, or Anaheim Ducks. I think they might have dropped the Mighty. But it's a good, good, candid conversation I had with him. Ryan's not one to mix words. He kind of just lets you know how he's feeling, and he's really smart about the situation. So we get to talk about how the coronavirus affects him, his future, where his legacy stands based on, you know, he's the most winningest goaltender in U.S. history, all that fun stuff. We touch on the 10 Olympics with the golden goal, how he kind of felt about it. So listen, enjoy the episode. This episode is brought to you by Bet Online. I know everybody's kind of bummed out about the coronavirus, but go over to Bet Online and check it out. Anyways, enjoy the show.
Millsy.
Yo.
Oh, you're alive.
Yeah, I'm here.
What's going on, buddy? How are you?
Nothing, just doomsday prepping.
I know. So is it wild out in California?
Well, I think like everybody else, there's not a lot of information about, you know, really how to conduct yourself except to get prepared. So we're just erring on the side of caution. We had our little guy out of school yesterday, and then they confirmed they're going to close schools Monday. And we're just, we're in the process of moving this year. So we kind of just went and stocked the house up like we normally would, but kind of did a little bit extra.
Yeah. Man, that's scary. I know we kind of just shut down. Locked ourselves into. I did the big Costco run 2 days ago, and we are not going anywhere for a little bit. But it's crazy. So, how did they tell you guys? Were you finished that game, and then what happened?
I mean, we finished the game, and it's just kind of like, we'll let you know what's going on. And I mean, we fully expected to kind of get the announcement. We'd probably play it to empty arenas. It's kind of what we figured because it didn't seem like there were any cases reported in the athletic world. And then I think the second the NBA guy tested and he was positive, and then there's so much cross contamination, like basketball people and hockey people are kind of around each other in some cities. So I think when that kind of happened, I think that there's really no getting around what had to be done. But I think we were all just kind of kidding ourselves. Like, I mean, a lot of this stuff should have been kind of kicked into gear much earlier. I think we were just a little bit in denial as a country. Even if it's not going to end up being bad, you want to get on the right side of these things. And, you know, you watch how some of the Asian communities have dealt with outbreaks in the past years and then how they've been dealing with this. And they were way, way ahead and very precautious. And they're still, you know, having issues. So hopefully everyone turns out for the best.
Everyone thinks they're invincible, right? So it's not going to happen to me.
Yeah. So we're
in the next thing, you know, everyone's infected.
Yeah. So we're, as a team, we're just got the group text going. I threw a group, like text to the boys in the morning when I was at the pharmacy, picture of my cart, kind of like, hey, let's go. Here we go.
Yeah. So do you guys train? You can't really work out unless you have a house gym. Like what is the, cause I think you guys will be out for a month, if not more. How does that, like if you test negative, do you get together for practices just on your own? Like what's.
We don't have any information yet. We're having this conversation when we're kind of in limbo because they just told us to go home and self quarantine. They gave an indication that there would be more information and maybe today, but it wasn't like a, hey, we know what's going on, we're going to tell you. It was more just, we think that we'll have more information for you tomorrow.
Just go take care of the family life and we'll let you know.
Yeah. I mean, that's basically where they left it. And there's no hint that will we finish out the regular season or some of the regular season, or we're just going to skip that altogether, which would mean in our situation, we'd be outside the playoff picture, obviously. So would that mean our season's over? Yeah, there's going to be a lot of questions for the next little while.
I know, it's such a weird. Hey, I forgot to introduce my co-host Tim is here. So sorry.
Okay. What's going on, Ryan? How you doing?
Good. So you guys just hiding away up in northern Michigan?
It's slow. Like, it's in Detroit, but it's slowly creeping up. I have like a family vacation planned for Scottsdale next week that I think is just gonna already get canceled. So it's just, yeah, all our schools are canceled here. It's really kind of starting to. It's like a movie. It's like, where is it going? Where is it spreading? It's so bizarre.
Yeah, I mean, same here. We don't really make any solid plans until hockey season ends.
Yeah.
So we don't have any plans per se, but we are just kind of in that what do we do next kind of moment.
Have you thought at all about what you're going to do in your time off? I mean, you got like the next Netflix queue, Bane's ready to go, or stack of books nearby?
Well, we got a 5-year-old who's going to be very bored. For us, we're just trying to figure out how to get organized. Make sure we got everything we need around the house, and then from there it's going to be more about, okay, can we take advantage of some family time? But right now we're just like I said, we were moving, so we're grabbing a few things from the house that we were moving out of, and we're trying to get things kind of dialed in the new house, and it's kind of an adventure in and of itself, so this is kind of makes it doubly stressful. So we're figuring it out.
An extra added piece for you, Ryan. The life of a hockey player, it's always hectic. It really is.
Yeah, for first world pandemic problems.
Well, listen, let's get back to some hockey, talk about some fun stuff rather than this depressing coronavirus stuff. So NCAA just shut down their whole season. They're not doing any of that stuff. I talked to a few guys at MTU, some of the seniors. What, you won the Hobie Baker, you had a lot of success. It's such a weird, I don't know what to ask here. What do you tell a senior or a guy in your stage in your career? What if, like, the season ends? What happens next year for a senior in college or an older guy like Patty Marlowe? We talked to him last week. What mindset do you think those guys are going through?
Well, probably the same one I'm going through. You know, nothing's guaranteed. And I was treating this season like, it, you know, if it ends up being my last, I was trying to take it all in. So I feel like I had kind of given myself that grace period where I was going to, like, this last month is when it was really starting to hit home, and now it ended very abruptly. So now I'm kind of like, oh, yeah, man, I don't know how to feel about it. I'm still processing quite a bit. So I do feel for those guys who thought they had more season in front of them, and especially guys who maybe won't continue on playing next year, because I feel like, you know, I could be somebody who's in that boat, you know. So did I play my last game and then did this, did I lose out on like that last 10 or 11 games?
So going back to your Michigan State days, like John said, you had like really a record-breaking stint there. I think you still got records for shutouts and wins. You had the Hobie Baker. I mean, what were your options coming out of high school? Why'd you choose the NCAA route over going to a junior team?
Well, John sat next to me for a long time in Buffalo. He can tell you I'm not a very big person. And believe it or not, when I was a teenager, I wasn't very big. So for me, I did have a certain amount of skill, I think, at that time. But I just didn't have the size or strength. Like, I had the good hockey sense, and I did have the skills to compete in, like, midget hockey and entering junior hockey. I was playing good hockey, but, you know, did I have the frame and the skill set to become a pro? Like, it was still kind of and unknown. A lot of it revolved around my strength. So when that realization kind of kicked in, the guys were much stronger than me and getting a lot bigger, taller for a while. It was basically like, you know, I need time because, I did stretch out a little bit when I was like 16 till I was 17. Like I got my driver's license. I was like 5'8". And then by the time I was 17, I was like 6'1". So I had like a quick growth spurt, probably not anywhere close to what John experienced in life.
So how much weight did you put on from, when did you leave college? How many years did you stay there?
I was there 3 years, but I spent an extra year playing junior hockey, just the way things worked out. I identified that I wanted to play college, and then so that kind of took me out of the junior mix. And then as I entered into our Canadian junior rather. So as I played tier 1 US, which would be kind of like tier 2 Canada, like North American Hockey League. I played in Sault Ste. Marie for 2 years. As I was playing there, I had a chance to go to Clarkson and play on a scholarship and start as a true freshman. At the same time, I grew up in so I'm the 9th one in my family to play at Michigan State, play hockey there. And my brother Drew is the 10th. So there's a lot of history there. And Michigan State, the way the goaltending had worked out is if I came as a true freshman, I would be like directly a year behind Joe Blackburn, who would have go on to have an All-American year that year, actually. Mm-hmm. So we worked it out where if I played another year junior, took that year, obviously, to get stronger, get bigger, I had an opportunity to get a full ride at Michigan State as well. And so I took that opportunity as a dream of mine to play at Michigan State since I was a kid with our family history. And although Clarkson was a great school, great hockey school, and presented me with a unique opportunity, I just really wanted to go with, you know, if I pass up on something that I'd always dreamed about, you know, what does that say about, you know, my mindset as a person? Like I gave myself the opportunity, it's right there. So I decided that, you know, that's the way I was going to work it. I was going to take that year, get stronger. And, you know, it worked out quite a bit. You know, I played a lot of hockey in the junior level, got to play a lot of starts, get some experience, because the game schedule is heavier than college schedule. And, you know, I started to work in with Michigan State's plans and get stronger, and you know, it definitely was, you know, helped me to have that extra year. I think that's kind of why I focused on college, because I thought it'd be the best chance for me to continue playing, you know, best chance for me to move up levels. Let's just give myself some time.
I can't imagine how weak you must have been in high school, because even when I saw you in pros, it's not like you were pushing up 250 pounds of the bench press. You still, how weak were you?
Well, I don't think I was even doing bench press then, probably. I mean, there got to a point in college though, like we were doing so many workouts, and you're at that age where like everything's kind of hitting right. And, you know, you're working out almost like we had more of a football style workout back then. So, I mean, we were benching quite a bit. I think at one point I could bench over 200 pounds. I don't think I could come anywhere close to that now. Yeah. Wow. I swear to God.
That's funny. Yeah. Cause in college we were just doing Olympic lifts. That's all we would used to do.
Oh yeah.
Push press, negative, dumbbell squat. That's bizarre.
Yeah. So many negative reps that you felt like you're going to pass out and die. But yeah, at a certain point, you know, I did have that strength. But then I think when you saw me in Buffalo, I was trying to figure out how to play the number of games I was playing, maintain my body, and it wasn't always a situation where I could maintain through the season. I it's really, really difficult. It's something like, it's a lot easier now that I'm backing up. I can maintain for once.
So fast forward a couple of years, drafted in 99, you first kind of saw the show in 2002-03. When Baron was the number one there, what was it like kind of learning from him a little bit? Did he show you the ropes of what it takes to be an NHL goalie? And what were some of the things that he taught you?
Yeah, coming into Buffalo is Marty and is Mika Nornan. And they kind of held it up to us like, okay, guys, figure it out. Like, it's the three guys, somebody's going to come out on top. And it was, that's how it was presented to us in most of the conversations, or at least to me. You know, Marty definitely had a leg up, and being coming from junior playing, I would say just at the time, probably that was probably a little bit higher level. And then coming into pro, and he had a couple of years of pro and worked with Hasek there. So I just identified it as, well, this is a straight competition. I just have to be dead focused on this. And, you know, from that, it was kind of inspiring that Marty is just such a great guy. You know, he's so nice to me, took me in. And I recognize that they're a very competitive situation, but, you know, we were always so friendly with each other, talking, able to be easy in the situation. And we were both going out there. And the Sabres at the time, I think we just caught the right kind of group and right kind of attitude, and everything was really about winning and doing it together. And we really supported each other, and it was a lot of fun.
I mean, you guys had some amazing talent during those years. You know, you got names like Drury, Vanek, Briere, Finneganov, Brian Campbell. Looking back now, did you expect to go on more playoff runs than you ended up doing?
Oh yeah, I mean, of course. I mean, when you have success, you never think it's going to stop. I remember walking out of Carolina when we lost in Game 7, just thinking, the next time we walk into a rink in this situation, we're going to win. And, you know, those chances aren't as frequent as you think when you catch that right kind of team, when you have that right kind of group. And that's what was really sad about that situation was, you know, we had two cracks at it, and then Drury and Briere are gone. And then a few other guys are gone. Brian Campbell's gone. It just started, you know, peeling away. We built it back up in 2010. We had a good year, and we would have these moments where we'd get close. But you know, that special flame or whatever it is that you feel with a certain kind of group, it never quite got back to that level. And that's the sad part, because we all knew it was there, and I kind of felt like it just, we didn't recognize how important it was to keep the guys who made that special.
When I was there, and you don't have to answer this if you don't want to, was the rumor true where they offered contracts to Drury and Briere, and then they kind of played around with it a little bit, and they didn't give them the contracts, and there was kind of a paper kind of trail, and then all of a sudden they had a really great year, and then Buffalo's like, oh yeah, sign those contracts, and like, well, no, we had a great year. What was there something behind that? Because a few guys told me that.
Yeah, I don't think we're ever going to really know. I mean, I hear the same things, but people always kind of want to inflate things or look at it with hindsight.
Yeah.
I mean, even that situation where you say, well, Drury, Briere gone, then Vanek gets offer sheeted. I mean, that really, you know, tied Darcy Regier's hands, because you know, he had an idea of how he wanted that team structured, and he thought for sure he was getting one or both, you know, of our captains back. And then it's like they're both gone, and then he has to pay Vanek at a level where he can't really balance out the other side of things with other players. So it's like, you know, we were immediately kind of put on tilt. So it's really unfortunate, because it's like, yeah, maybe if they got ahead of it a little bit more, but you don't know how the negotiations work on either side. You know, two groups have to negotiate that. So not sure.
Yeah, I just heard that from a few different people, and I was like, I wonder what the real story is. So I guess we'll never know. But yeah, it's so you mentioned starting a bunch of games. I just looked it up. You started 76 games in 2007-08.
Yeah.
How do you start that many games? Like, that is incredible. I looked up the record too. It's 79 by Grant Fuhr. So you almost set the NHL record for games in a season. Like, that's mind-boggling to play 76 games, especially in this generation where you're getting so many shots and you're just, I think, a little bit more active than they were back in the day.
Yeah, I'm not sure how that worked out. I just remember it really was going off of Lindy and how he felt about the matchup and how things, like, the schedule wasn't as condensed as it is now.
Yeah.
So, and we had the East Coast, and our travel wasn't terrible. So it kind of felt like we had this, sometimes you'd have like these 2 or 3 days to kind of just breathe. So, I mean, I don't know how guys are even playing close to 70 games now with the way the schedule is condensed. And you have some teams have 20 instances of back-to-backs. And then especially if they're a Western team, you have all the travel.
Yeah, so that wears on you a lot.
So, yeah, I think it just was a kind of an odd year. And we were really pushing to make the playoffs. And I think we missed it by like a couple points.
So the one thing I noticed when I sat next to you, and I tell this story a lot, everyone's like, so who was the weirdest goalie you ever played with? What like what did Ryan Miller do? And I'm like, one of the weird things Millsy did was on an off day, he would set up his pads in your stall and you would back up and you would look at it and you would have a pair of scissors and you'd go and you'd cut and you'd step back and you look at it and you'd always be cutting stuff off and adjusting stuff. What are you doing? Like, why would you do that?
I mean, you're probably talking about like chest protector and stuff. Yeah, well,
just always just fiddling with stuff. I'm like, yeah, why I mean, that's did you more, always do that?
Well, it's a lot of the stuff that has been flushed out and gotten kind of solved over the years. You see guys wearing stuff now where you're like, oh, that makes sense. Well, back in the day, a lot of stuff didn't make sense, or didn't make sense to me at least. A lot of it was just reaction to getting absolutely roasted by a slap shot. And you're just like, I don't want that to happen again. And other stuff was just trying to, you know, make the equipment work a little more efficiently, like knee pads fitting under the pants and how they move, and so they don't get caught on stuff. Like, they're kind of just little things.
Yeah, you've played long enough where, so Kay Whitmore does all the goalie stuff still, or is that kind of changed?
No, he's doing it.
Did you start before he came on the scene?
Yeah, they weren't checking in that fashion when I started.
And then did you have to change your padding at all? Did you ever try to like, not cheat the system, but like just make yourself bigger? Or like, did your pads change along the way, knowing that you're going to get checked every so often?
Well, not in that way. I mean, you always try to max it out. I remember when I came in as a pro, I was wearing Vaughn equipment. And Vaughn, for whatever reason, the pads I wore, they would vary because they're made by hand. And like a lot of stuff is measured and cut very differently now. But like at the time, you get these pads and they would look a little bit thinner. Like I remember I got kind of a mandate from management, like you have to wear different pads, you look too small. So I had to kind of like build myself up and get used to this different gear that all the other pros are wearing. And then it just became the evolution of the gear. And like now, I mean, we can't even really alter anything. You know, your chest protector can't be altered. Pants can't be altered. Not that we were like, I was cheating anything, but like if I felt like something was in my way or if I was getting hit somewhere, I could add a pad and then send a picture of it into the league and say, hey, I'm getting hit. This doesn't look like it affects anything as far as sizing. Are you guys good with it? And they'd be like, yeah, it's fine. But now they have to really see things, and there's a lot less you can kind of tinker with. So it's all fine. I mean, I think that
you've adjusted pretty well.
I think that the gear's gotten so good that there's less of that. I just feel like the foams and the plastics and like all these things that they have now are just at such a high level compared to what we were using back in the day. Like, I mean, I'm pretty much, you know, I had to have a bone taken out of my wrist a year and a half ago because I was just getting beat down over the years in my catching hand. And I mean, if I was wearing a more modern glove, you know, it probably doesn't happen.
Are you like Marty where you don't change your certain equipment you've had your whole life? Cause Marty still wears those skates that he had when he was in junior. Yeah. Do you have anything like that?
I mean, probably would have been to a certain degree, I think, maybe yes. But I've tried to evolve, and like my pads are very much more modern than when I started. My glove is probably, it's sort of like it was like 12 years ago, but it's kind of the modern version. And I don't know, you just get to a certain point where you trust certain things. And I went through X amount of games without getting hurt. So it's like you're kind of thinking, well, I don't want to just switch something to switch. If I have a need, you know, I would switch.
With currently no NBA, NHL, college basketball, or college hockey, you might think that there's nothing to bet on. Well, you'd be wrong. Bet Online still has hundreds of places to wager, from their online casino to poker and blackjack, all open 24 hours a day and all online. Sports aren't totally done. There's still MMA, and esports is on the rise, baby. If you're into entertainment, you can still bet on American Idol, the elections, the spelling bee, and even my favorite, the Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Contest. Be sure to use promo code BLUEWIRE to receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet Online, your new ticket to online action.
So speaking about getting hurt, the reason I became your teammate, the incident, Ryan.
Oh, yeah.
Was there anything behind that, or was that the only time you guys tangled together?
No, not nothing there that I know of. Just a play.
Bluchis just ran you, and that was it? And then it just kind of went from there? Did you, like, he obviously had a reputation.
Well, the thing that kind of got me, and I think everyone kind of jumps on top of, is, you know, I stayed around to give that interview. Because, I mean, I'm never going to be able to beat the guy in a fight, and probably not ever going to square off against him and do anything other than get pounded. So, I mean, like, what am I really going to do? So I just felt like I had to say something, and I stand behind my commentary because I made eye contact with him, and I don't feel like I was that far.
Oh, is that right? I didn't know that. When he was coming down, you guys locked eyes.
Well, yeah, I'm watching him the whole way. I see that he's completely lost the play. He's not going to be able to catch up to it. And I made my way out, and I'm looking. He looked right at me, and then he kind of put his head down again.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, so that's what I'm kind of sticking with. And, you know, it is what it is. It ends up being a play in hockey, and we're moving forward.
Were you happy when then I got signed? You're like, yeah, here comes Big John. Hell yeah.
Well, yeah, in hindsight, for more than one reason, I had a lot of fun hanging out with you. But you did cause a bit of a stir in our first exhibition game.
What happened? I don't remember that. Yeah, what happened?
You don't remember tracking down?
Nice goal?
Yeah. Well, he went after Bill, and then he tried to cut you down like a tree, and started a huge melee.
Was that your first fight ever, first and only?
It was one of them. It was the only one where we really squared off.
I was laying on the bottom of a pile. I had like 8 guys on me, and all of a sudden I hear the place erupt. I'm like, what is going on? I didn't see you fighting until I got in the locker room after, and I saw it on the replay. What brought that on? How did you guys end up fighting?
Well, Clarkson? He jumped the bench.
Clarkson jumped off, yeah.
All right, so we're outnumbered, right? So I'm like, okay, we're outnumbered, and this is not going well. I'm going to have to probably do something. So, like, if it's all even, maybe the goalies kind of hang back. But it's automatically, I see a guy jump the bench. It's outnumbered. You're going to get attention from probably, like, 3 guys, because that's what it would take to wrangle you. But, you know, I didn't really know, like, once I engaged, like, it's probably going to make their goalie engage. And if I'm, you know, in the pile, I don't want to get sucker punched. I figured I might as well just square off with the person who's probably going to,
You asked Bernier to go.
Well, we were both kind of like, he wanted to go, and I wanted to help in the pile. And I was like, well, if he's going to eventually go, I'd rather not get sucker punched. I'd rather square off.
I love it. Oh, I was so happy when you came into the locker room afterwards. I was like, yeah. All right. That was so fun. Did you not have fun though during that? Come on.
It was fun. It was fun until he slid out of his gear. Like, he had like the stretchy, like, Velcro on his stuff. So he kind of like slid out I was like, oh man, how did he get out of his stuff? Like, he got out of everything. It was like a Houdini escape out of all that stuff. I was like, wow. So I just ended up playing a lot of defense in that fight, kind of making him punch over top of my elbow as it was like protecting, you know, nothing really happened. So, but it was fun. The boys had a good time.
I thought it was great. Those rivalries we had with us and then Boston. How were you happy that I beat up Thornton, or did you want me to fight Lucic? Because I always asked him to fight. He never said yes. I always kind of regretted that, not being able to fight him.
Yeah, no, it's fine. I mean, it is what it is. And like I said, I didn't think it was I don't know. If you talk about the code of hockey, it's like when you make eye contact with somebody like that, and you're just making a play after you, he missed the puck, he could have been on a breakaway. You know, he made eye contact. I just think the chivalrous thing to do is just be like, that play's gone. But, you know, he escalated it.
Yeah.
But it's like in a situation where, you know, I can't really do anything about it. I'm not as strong as him. I'm never going to be in a position to do anything about it. So, you know, I just tried to kind of move forward.
Yeah. Maybe you should have continued with your college workout regimen, Ryan.
It would have taken a lot more than a college workout regimen.
Oh, geez.
There's some big boys in the league. And, you know.
That's why I'm there, baby. That's why I'm there. Don't worry about it.
So Ryan, you kind of had a reputation as being a shootout specialist and kind of known for being aggressive on the shootout attempt and challenging the shooters outside the crease. How did that become your approach, and what was your philosophy there?
Just kind of the way I grew up. Like I said, I wasn't very big for a while. So a lot of the style you kind of learn is in that kind of early teenage years. You're kind of figuring things out, and then you're translating it. And I wasn't very big, so I kind of had to skate a lot. So I was skating a lot and putting pressure on guys to make a decision they didn't want to make. So really, I just learned how to set traps, you know, get guys going directions they don't want to go. And as I got bigger and cover more net, I could kind of pick and choose, but I still like to maintain a certain distance from the player. And when guys started figuring out what works and what doesn't in the shootout, it's changed quite a bit. I mean, at first, I feel like goalies almost had an advantage. Guys were just like, what do we do? We have to keep the puck moving forward. So they're just trying these really quick moves where you could really set the guys up and, you know, take away the net or make them make a bad play. But now
where did you want them to shoot?
Well, just kind of limiting their options. That's why I wanted to be close to the play. You know, instead of giving them, you know, three outs where they can shoot five hole or glove or pull it around you or something, like you really set it up so they really have maybe the one good option and the other ones that aren't looking so good. Yeah. It would take a long time to explain all this.
Who do you think was the hardest player to stop in a shootout or on a breakaway that seemed to always to score on you?
Oh, I mean, there's been a lot of guys over the years who are tough. I mean, when it all first started, I think Kovalev was somebody you looked at, like, what is he going to do? And then as guys kind of evolved and got a little bit better, I don't know specifically in the shootout, but I mean, there's just guys who are, I can't think of one particular guy.
Kovalev's a good one, Millsy. That's a pretty good one. So you've had some massive moments in your career. You've won the Vezina in 2010. Also in that year, you won the MVP of the Olympics. Can you just talk about it? Was that a bittersweet award because you guys lost, you know, with Crosby's infamous goal? How is that to accept that award, knowing that you guys lost the final game? Like, what was going through your head?
Well, luckily I didn't really know about it.
Oh, is that right?
Well, yeah, it's a weird one because the way they set the Olympics up with the time frame is basically like everyone just kind of left except us, you know, U.S., Canada. Everyone else is pretty much gone, I think, except maybe for a handful of players. And I kind of told myself, because the ceremony, the opening ceremony wasn't really something that was available to us. So because of the schedule. So I was like, man, that would have been cool to be a part of. The only way to be a part of the closing ceremony would be to be in the gold medal game, essentially. I was like, yeah. I was like, you know what? If I can be a part of the closing ceremony, it means we've had a great tournament. I'm going to do it no matter what and enjoy myself and just take in the moment. And so we were hustling to get through that, and I got selected for random drug testing. Yeah. So we just lost in overtime. And I had to go down into the, you know, it was in Vancouver. We had to go down into like the catacomb basement like area for this, in this isolated kind of area for this drug testing. And you have to go like immediately after getting undressed. So I couldn't even go in the lock. Like you have to do media right after coming off the ice because it's international. So like you just lose and you have to walk through this grid of media people.
Brutal.
And then it's like you do they kind of limited it for us there, so I did one interview, and then they had some other stuff available, and then I got to the room, they're like, hey, you got selected for drug testing, and like I didn't even my parents were there, and it ended up that my wife, we were just dating at the time, she came up earlier in the Olympics, and then she went home, and then she ended up coming back because we made the gold medal game, but I didn't know she was going to be there. Like all this stuff is happy, I want to see my family, and we're stuck down in drug testing, and I'm trying to like process all of this. You know, we just got beaten overtime, and what I feel is one of the better games, you know, that has been played, and certainly the best game I've been a part of. And yeah, it was just wild and surreal. And so then I got on all of our closing ceremony like wardrobe, and a few of the guys wanted to do it. I think about half the team maybe or so, maybe a few more. Finally get all ready, and we're just kind of like try to go and take it all in, and while we're walking over there, somebody's like, hey, by the way, you got MVP of the tournament.
Oh, that's gonna be cool.
So that's kind of like
cool, Ryan.
Yeah, it was cool, but it's also kind of like, oh, by the way. So that's kind of how it
all the best players in the whole world are in the tournament, and you won the MVP. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, no, I took it like that, and I'm proud of what we did, but it is still hard. Like, I'm actually trying to figure out what to do with the jersey and the medal right now that we're moving houses, because the medal has been in a lockbox and a sock drawer for 10 years. So
I know. Do you display it, or do you just kind of just put the jersey up?
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I'm proud of it, but I'm also it's hard. It's a weird one.
You can send it to me if you want. I'll put it up in my house.
So adding to your list of accolades, Ryan, you have the record for most wins by a United States-born goaltender. I mean, at what point did that become like on the radar for you? Was it something that you were striving for? And what does it mean for you to have that record?
I mean, I guess I didn't really look at it, but I knew there were certain numbers I wanted to hit when I was signing with Vancouver. And I felt like, you know, we had a couple tough years there, and I got injured at the end of my first year, and games are starting to kind of slip away. So when I was able to sign in Anaheim and kind of really look and see, like, okay, like if your career winds down, like what's out there? You know, that was there, and I was like, oh, well, that would be cool. So it's been nice to play, you know, this long and have the opportunities and to kind of push the goal line a little bit further down, because, I mean, an American goalie is going to cruise past this record.
I don't know. Goalies don't start as many games like they used to, like you said. So that might be a tough one to kind of break.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, I feel like, you know, Quickie is very close if he keeps a certain pace, and you know, we'll see. He certainly is right there.
Yeah, he's about 60 behind you, I think. I don't know, we'll see.
So my last question, Ryan, then I'll hand it back to John, but we've asked John before, you know, he talks about his teammates and his playing days, and I asked him a couple weeks ago who the smartest player he ever played with, and he said you were always kind of up on the the local, you know, news and current events and all that stuff. Very well-read and well-spoken guy. He also talked about, like I said, the superstitious stuff and, you know, the fiddling with your gear. So I want to kind of give you a chance to maybe share some locker room or on ice stories about John and maybe some of the stuff the fans might, you know, have a laugh at.
Well, I don't think I did an interview the entire year where John wasn't in the background somehow.
I love just being on camera.
I think he was either in the background of the actual shot or he's in the background of the interview. So it's tough to kind of keep things moving along in the interview. No, I like playing with John a lot because he kept things real light, despite people probably. I think people have really got to know him a lot more because of the All-Star game and how much joy and fun, you know, he kind of brought to that. And that's what he brought to the locker room. I think people looked at his role on the ice as, you know, intimidating and sometimes that can be kind of a mean-spirited kind of situation. But, you know, there's nothing about that with John. And I always had a lot of fun hanging out and talking with him. It's nice to be next to him in the locker room. And because, you know, for the times I get focused for the game and I'm not as talkative, certainly when I'm trying to be dialed in, I think that it's nice to have somebody who wants to be, you know, a little more talkative, having some fun, because I can kind of share in that energy and I don't have to really give a lot of that out, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think I pressed you to talk more than you pressed me to talk. That's for sure.
I like talking, but it's certainly easier when somebody else can do it for you.
So I had a question about you. When you were picking free agent teams, when you were, you know, a UFA, how much of a factor did the wife play into that when you were picking where to go to?
Oh, it's been...
Because I know Noreen was pretty... She's like, I don't know her acting career right now, but she was pretty big back in the day when I met you.
Yeah, and she continues to work, and she's on a network show right now, recurring. And, you know, it's a big part of the decision-making, although, you know, hockey is so intense that it does really become a very selfish kind of job. It, you know, it takes so much time, and, it, you know, when we've added... We added that we have a family, it certainly becomes a lot more responsibilities. So, you know, a big part of coming west and remaining west or even getting to Anaheim, a lot of it's family driven, but it was also opportunity driven. I think Vancouver at the time was a great opportunity. That first year out there, we made the playoffs and things got a little bit off track. In a transition kind of moment, but we had a good veteran playoff team that first year, and that was kind of what part of the decision. And same thing with Anaheim. Coming to Anaheim, we were a playoff team, and again things kind of went off track a little bit, so unfortunately, you know, that's how it goes in the NHL with the amount of parity and the salary cap and whatever. You're going to get these cycles. And but, you know, my decision was based a lot on family and a lot on opportunity.
Yeah, that's what I respect about you. You don't just kind of – you take everything into account. So speaking of, you know, ending your career potentially next year, the year after this year, who knows, when you retire, which team will you retire with? And then subsequently, when you go into the Hall of Fame, because it'll happen, which team do you go into the Hall of Fame with?
Well, fortunately, I don't have any real say in those decisions. I'm gonna.
Don't you get to pick who you go in the hall with? I think you get to pick your team.
I guess I'll worry about it if I'm at that level. It's just something where I feel like I feel I at least had another month of hockey in me.
I think you got a few more years, Brian, for sure.
So, yeah, we'll see how things go. Buffalo is dear to my heart, obviously, and I've had great experiences in my other stops, but, you know, I always think back on those years in Buffalo as especially the early ones where we were really defining, you know, who we were as players, you know, with the group, you know, included guys I came up with from Rochester with, you know, those were, those are fun years.
When I'm still pretty good friends with Patty Marlowe. We interviewed him a while ago, and Joe Thornton. And when I asked them about, you know, their futures, Jumbo wants to stay in San Jose. Like, he likes it there, but Patty, he said, I'll play anywhere. I don't care where it is. Like, if someone wants me next year, I'll play. Do you have that same mentality, or is it you would like to stay in a certain spot, or else you would just kind of call it quits?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I need to evaluate. I was allowing myself to kind of be here in this moment, and I haven't moved past it yet. So it's tough to say.
Well, I got to say, Ryan, we teased out the interview a couple of days ago, just, you know, letting people know we're interviewing you and what questions they had, and pretty much unilaterally, it was all stuff like, you know, just from Sabres fan, just letting you know how much you mean to them and to that fan base. I hope you know, how much you're still loved in that city and that, you know, they'd love to see you back there.
Well, yeah, I appreciate having some time to talk a little hockey.
Yeah, it's probably reciprocal. But anyway, Millsy, I don't want to take up any more of your time. I know you're moving, you're busy, but I really appreciate it, bud. And maybe we can touch base again in a couple of weeks and see if there's any movement.
Yeah.
How's it going? If you're in a new house, and we'll see where we're at. We'd love to have you back on, man.
Yeah, anytime, Mike. Hopefully things are good with you guys, and everyone needs to stay safe. So plan accordingly. Keep your head down.
Guess what, Millsy? My wife's pregnant with number 6.
No way.
That? Yeah.
How is this possible? You guys are outnumbered.
I'll send you a video.
Do you have to like have both sets of grandparents so you guys are all playing one-on-one, or what's going on?
No, we have her parents help us out, but it is a mess. Why do you think I retired? I just want to fill myself with kids, my house. It's insane.
You guys are just constantly on the penalty kill. Like, you're a specialist now.
It was a zone defense. What can I say?
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So anyways, enjoy the peace and quiet. Thanks, man. But anyways, we'll be in touch. I really appreciate it, Millsy. And, have fun at home.
All right, bud. Later.
All right. See you.